morning. So last time we started talking about routing as kind of a preparation for talking about setting up routing tables. We talked about, well, what happens when routing tables aren't set up correctly? And we talked about a couple types of error messages we can get typically from routers. It turned out that, you know, destination unreachable, we can also get from end hosts. And we mentioned that there was this protocol that was typically used for this called ICMP, both IPv4 and IPv6. And basically when there's a message that they want to forward and they can't do it, for some reason, they send back this error, usually, because sometimes they might just decide, oh, we're just gonna drop it without telling you anything. And some people just kind of falsely think that's a good thing to do for securities. It's bad if people know what's happening to their packets that you accepted for some reason. And then we all talked a little about fragmentation. So one of the issues is that packets can be too big for one network, but not for another. And IPv4 had this system of fragmentation that was kind of very built into IPv4 to handle it. In IPv6, they still support that, but they said it's not going to happen in the middle of the network. If you want fragmentation to happen, you, the sender of the packet, need to figure out how to fragment it. And you need to fragment it. When you send it, it's not going to be done in the middle for you. Then we started talking about kind of methods for routing. And all of our methods for routing are going to use this flooding idea that we kind of saw used kind of accidentally in MAC learning, which is that we're going to have our forwarding table and we're going to periodically share our routes with the neighbors, usually excluding the ones that would double back because we know we don't want loops anyways. And they're going to use that information to add to their table in some manner. And we're going to talk about a bunch of distributed routing protocols, so ones that, you know, sort of don't have someone centrally planning the network or gathering all the information about the network and then telling everyone what to do, which is a way you can do this, but not the most common way it's done because, well, it's hard to figure out who should do that and how to make that reliable. And they're all going to be based on this kind of flooding idea. We're just going to do different things with what information we share and share different types of information. Now, the kind of simplest form of flooding we mentioned, well, if we just like add those routes directly to our table without any sort of filtering, then we're gonna end up with loops. And one way to avoid loops is just to disable the links that would make there be loops. And we'll call this a spanning tree because it turns out that a network structure which doesn't have any loops, that's a tree. And so we'll look today at the spanning tree protocol, kind of a way of producing a spanning tree where we don't do it centrally, we do it kind of where each member of the tree figures out where its edges in the tree are, that is which links it should enable that are part of the tree and which links are not part of the tree that it should disable. So questions about these things we covered last time? Okay, so questions about reliable three. So I sent out one thing about that I should have done for reliable one about lambdas and Python. I need to realize that they're gotchas, because we don't actually teach that part of Python very much. And I think it, it looks like most people's issues are with corner cases related to that they shrink the window size. I should draw for this. That they have a window and they have all these packets outstanding, and then they shrink the window size. So this is their new window. And then they receive a packet here. So now their window is like this and handling what happens to those packets there is one corner case people have trouble with. Namely that you probably cancel transmitting them, retransmitting them, and now you need to undo that. and also what happens to the packets here. These ones you should not be retransmitting anymore until the window it actually advances that far. So those are the corner cases I've seen the most trouble with as far as like big bugs and like things hanging. The other kind of issue I've seen, which is more subtle, is people misunderstanding what additive increase is. So additive increase is a additive increase per round trip time. This means your increase per packet lowers the more packets you send for round trip time. So if you aren't doing that in some manner, then it's not additive increase, it's something faster. If you're doing like a constant per packet, it's something faster. It's like slow start, it's an exponential increase. So questions, comments about reliable 3? Okay, and reminding you there's a packet scheduling assignment scheduled for next week, which I can take questions on, though I suspect people haven't looked much at it. And I suppose I have occasionally get anonymous feedback from this course, and I will, on a controlled manner, talk about it. Lack of clear writing on slides. I definitely wasn't thinking about this on Tuesday, and should have been. I know this is a problem I have of my bad handwriting, and especially in this course, where I haven't refined my slides over many semesters to move the things I would write into slides, which is one of my defenses to this, but obviously not the main thing I should be doing. Also asking if I could drop an assignment. I'm not planning on doing that. So I know that since I'm doing many of these assignments the first time, I don't have a great judge on sort of difficulty. My plan for dealing with that is at the end of the semester, when I figure out what's a B, what's an A, I will like look at, you know, if there's an assignment that took everyone's grade down 4 points, well, that's gonna adjust where that threshold is. Okay, and so let's go, so we talked about flooding and our spanning tree. And so we're gonna go back to our spanning tree idea. And I mentioned that if you are doing this kind of centrally, we have this algorithm where basically you take our tree, you have a graph, I should do it in a clearer color. So you have a graph that you could make a tree out of, and you select edges from this graph nodes and edges basically to add to the tree. So let's say, for example, I decide that this is going to be the first node in my tree. So I'll fill this in here, and then I'm going to like choose an edge to add that adds a new thing to the tree and add that, and I just keep doing this process and I will get what is called a spanning tree. I'll get a tree that is formed from that graph, and I'll these edges those are clearer. And basically, as long as each time I add an edge, I'm adding a edge to a vertex that I haven't covered yet, node I haven't covered yet, and I don't create any loops, this will result in our spanning tree that we want. And we just keep doing this until we can't do it anymore. And we want to always end up with the same spanning tree. And the reason we're going to want to do this in our distributed case is that we're going to use getting the same spanning tree to make sure that everyone who's running some variant on this algorithm who's not explicitly coordinating always ends up with the same tree, meaning that they always decide each link is either part of the tree or not, and they know which links to disable, and everyone agrees on that decision. And we're going to choose a specific order to consider new nodes to add to the tree and to consider do this algorithm. And the order I've specified here seems like we can only do it centrally. And we'll talk about like changing it from doing it centrally to doing it in a distributed manner. But the central version is that we're gonna use the names of the nodes kind of as a tiebreaker. We're gonna say the node with the earliest name, it's our root. Don't care where it is, it's our roots. And we're going to try to add a link that is as close to the root as possible before we consider any other links. And when we have multiple links that are the same distance from the root, we're going to choose the link from the node with the earlier names. So let's look at what this does in this example. So here, my first rule is my root is my lowest node name node, so that's going to be A here. And I'm going to look at the links I can add that add something to this tree, and right now that's every link from A, both of them. And my first priority is going to be the one to B, my second priority is going to be the one to G, because I'm sorting by the name. So I'm going to add the first priority one that adds B to the tree, and I'm going to make the same kind of decision. I'm going to try to look for the link that's closest to A first, and there's only one candidate left, that's the one to G. Now I have some more nodes to consider, and I want to consider the links that are, you know, as close to A as possible. So those candidates are the one between B and G. I'm going to reject that one because it doesn't add anything to the tree. It also would create a cycle, but I don't actually need to explicitly compute that. I just need to know it doesn't add anything new, therefore it's not part of the tree. You know, and that's something we're going to see the way this works, that, you know, if it wouldn't add anything new, it would create a cycle. We don't have to actually find that there's the loop. We know it's there because of how this algorithm works. And my first priority is going to be the one from B, then the one from F. Oh, and I forgot here. So this, I thought I fixed the labeling on this. So this is the second priority, the one from G to E, and this is the third priority. Let's label it. So we have three candidates that are new links that are at the right distance. The one to D, because we're tie-breaking based on names, that's going to be the first one we consider. Okay. So we'll add that one. And now we have these two at the next distance. We also have this node from D to E, but it's further away from the root. So we're going to choose the one from G to E, because it's closest to the root. We don't care that G is before D, because our first rule is closest to the root wins, our second rule is name. So we add that. Then our next node edges to consider are the ones that would add F. We have the one from G to F and E to F. In this case, the one from G is closer to the root of A, so it's the one that wins. And we're going to select it, even though, yes, E is before G in our ordering, but we don't get there yet. So this is the specific standing tree we're going to construct. Now, so far, I've shown us doing this centrally, and it's not very interesting centrally. And the order doesn't seem very important centrally. Like, you know, nothing would have gone wrong in this process if we chose, you know, to add F to E instead of G to E. But the important thing is that we've chosen a consistent result. And our distributed algorithm is going to be based on the idea that because we have this one result we've chosen, we can detect if we've made a mistake in that result. And that's kind of going to be the basis of our distributed algorithm. So we're going to have our network has decided on some partial spanning tree, and we're going to say, could this other edge be better than the one you've chosen? And we're going to use that to fix it to get this single designated one. So as an example, here I have the wrong tree. And I can look at the links that I'm missing here and say, oh, that's something I should add. So for example, if I discover there's a link from A to G, then G can look at what edges, what links it has in the spanning tree and say, gosh, if there's a link from me to A, then this link from G to B is wrong, because that gets me closer to the root. If we look at the F to E versus D to E root, we can say, E can say, I better choose the E to D route because that's D is less than E and they're tied otherwise. And similarly, we can say that if E discovers that I have E to G, it can say, well, that takes precedence over E to D because it's closer to the root. So as long as nodes can figure out, how close a link is to the root and what node ID it goes to, they can look at their candidates and say, which of these are wrong? And that's going to be the basis of our protocol, that each node is going to track some information about the tree to get our distance to the root, because that was important for our tiebreaker. And it's going to use that to fix its link that goes up to the root. So we're going to have each node responsible to its link that goes closer to the root. And it's going to track its information about what it thinks the root is. So in our example, the root was A because that was the first node, but one thing we want the real version of this to handle is if A goes down, we want to make the spanning tree based on B. And if A comes back up, we want to move the spanning tree to go to A. So we're going to track what we believe the root is, and if we discover a way to get to a root with a lower ID, we're going to use that instead of what we believe right now. We're going to keep track of what our best link to the root of the tree is. And if we find something that gets us closer or to a lower root ID, or just gets us to a lower root ID or closer to the root, preference order here, or to a lower ID as our next hop, as the next thing closer to the root, then we're going to change that idea. We're going to keep track of our distance, what we think our distance is with the link we've currently chosen. And importantly, we're going to figure this out by asking the node that we have the link to, and we're going to tell the nodes that think they have a link to us about this distance. And that's how we're going to discover how far things are from the root. And we're going to keep track of which other nodes are below us so we can inform them when we update things. And we're just going to periodically share this with our neighbors. So I mentioned we're going to have this flooding idea everywhere. Here's our first instance of it. We're going to see it several more times. But we're going to share, all this information. Here's what I believe, how I believe things are. I believe the root is this. I believe my distance is this. What do you think? And when we receive information, we're going to potentially update our notion of what our upgoing link is and all that other bookkeeping. And we're going to try to find a better link, if possible, from that information. Sometimes that won't work, sometimes it will. And I guess something that I don't have explicitly written here, I should mention, if links go down. So if a link goes down, obviously we can't use it in the tree and we'll update our information accordingly. And also this means that if I'm told that the node that I think is going up, has a different distance, I have to update that distance. So as an example, what is this going to look like? So each of our nodes are going to track kind of their current state. I have forgotten to written the state for A here, which is R equals A, D equals 0. new link. But we are all going to track, you know, what we think the root is. And if we don't know anything yet, we're going to guess the root should be ourselves. Or if we don't have it, if we don't have any link that works that goes to the root, our root is ourselves. And, you know, we're going to send updates to our neighbors. So we're just going to tell, so E, for example, is going to tell F, G, and D, hey, I think the root is E. And it has distance 0. And F and G are going to say, oh, well, E is lower than me. Therefore, E is a better root than myself. So they're going to update their state to say, okay, now E's the root. And the tree includes the edge. You know, the tree goes up from me, including the edge to E. And, you know, D is also going to send an update. And it's going to tell B and E that, hey, you know, I think I'm the root and I'm closest. And that's going to make E update its notion of things. And that's going to mean that E, well, now E probably is going to need to update its neighbors. So E is later on is going to send to G here, right, is going to send R equals D, D equals 1, E D, R equals D, D equals 1, E D. And both of these nodes are going to update their notion of where the root of the tree is and how far they are, because they've been informed by their uplink that, oh, it's a different tree now. So they're going to say distance 2, same next node, distance, this should have been distance 1 to begin with, D equals 1. So this is going to be distance 1 gets crossed out to, where is my, yes, to distance 2. But they're going to update their notion, and the root is not E anymore, but it's D. You know, and then at some point, we're going to have B inform D that root R root equals B, and we're going to do this again. You know, and we're eventually going to end up at that tree I showed you that we constructed centrally. But we're going to do this through a series of little updates where we, you know, eventually learn the, you know, who to go up to and where the root is, which might take a few steps for us to figure out, you know, how to get to the root the most fastest way, but we'll eventually get there. And, you know, we're basing this on this idea that we can always update to a configuration that's closer to the optimal one, you know, the one where we choose the root as the lowest node ID and we choose the lowest edges. And also we can, you know, deal with, if a link goes down, we can say, okay, well, that can't be part of the tree anymore, and update and find, look for the next best thing from what our neighbors tell us about. Yeah.
So if we happen to pick like the root node, or like order the names in a wrong way that puts like the roots at a link that is very, like has a very high latency towards all the other nodes, wouldn't this method kind of help? Because it kind of depends on the ordering of the name.
So question is, because this depends on the ordering of the name, if our names happen to be poor, doesn't this mean we get a bad tree? And not a bad tree in the sense that it's going to have loops, but it won't have loops, but in the sense that it's going to be slow. And the answer is yes. So what we'll have control over if we're an administrator is that we can specify what the node IDs are in a way that overwrites the defaults to choose what the route should be and to make it better match the sort of physical layout of our network. And that's going to be the main fix for that problem. Is that the system administrator can configure the IDs for this protocol in a way where they make sure a specific node is for the spanning tree purposes, you know, has the AID, not some other ID.
But also, wouldn't it be very hard to introduce like a new node if it's like right next to A?
So, question: wouldn't it be very hard to introduce a new node if it's right next to A? Typically, we will very sparsely use the ID space. So I'm showing it for fitting on the slides that like it's AB, but you know probably it's like ID 1 million, ID 2 million, that sort of thing. If we do that sort of scheme, then we have plenty of room to add additional nodes. But if we don't, indeed, that would get awkward. So this is sort of the basis of the spanning tree protocol, which is very commonly used for Ethernet. Because remember, Ethernet doesn't have time to link, so it's super important for us to avoid loops. But we still want, you know, to have redundant paths. You know, we don't want to have to build our network so it doesn't have any loops. We just want it to not have any loops as far as where packets are switched to. And when this is applied in Ethernet, links that aren't in the spanning tree are blocked, meaning that the switch will not send traffic down them, except for the spanning tree protocol messages, which are kind of an exception. And there's a delay before activating a port while you're doing the spanning tree protocol because we know it takes a bit of time for us to get the right answer. And we periodically send updates to all neighbors because we want to make sure that if you know links change, that we update our view of the network to get the new spanning tree to figure out that, oh, a link goes down, so you know my path to the route got longer. We need to do that update. You know, and typically that's done on the order of seconds, and also triggered by changes. Write that down. So plus triggered by changes. So if there are changes, so if we detect a link goes down, we're going to send an update right away. If we get an update that changes our configuration, changes, you know, our distance, we're going to send it right away. And even if we don't have a change, we're going to send it right away in case someone joined the network, you know, or information got stale. We're going to periodically send updates to make sure, because, you know, if a wire gets cut, you know, how are we going to tell if we aren't, like, checking for it? And there's one more kind of, some other kind of little extra things the real protocol supports that are quite significant. So one is that I talked about the distance being strictly the number of steps. The real protocol supports a variable cost for links. So that's another way the system administrator can make it choose the correct spanning tree. So that they can say, this link is really expensive, avoid using it in the spanning tree. And they can configure the router to basically say, when something goes down this link, it has, you know, it doesn't add one to the distance, it adds 100. You know, and control that, control sort of what spanning tree gets created in that way. Also, there's a modern variant called the Rapid Spanning Tree Protocol, which does the same kind of thing, except it tries to kind of build two spanning trees, and that it kind of tries to have a backup to the root. The idea being that when we have a failure and we learn that, you know, our uplink is no longer, you know, connect, no longer goes to the root, we can just switch to the other one. And we have an alternate path that connects us to the network And we can do that quicker than the normal protocol, which can take a bunch of steps to find the new root and the new path to the root when we have a disconnection. Okay, so questions on spanning tree protocol. So yeah, so we have our basic protocol update. And I guess I should mention, you know, the thing here is lower distance link, you know, sort of important step that I didn't mention explicitly that I think is a subtle point is, and you know, if current link got long, current link status changed. So example, you know, longer distance update it. Update our info. Right. So that's an important step is when we get these updates, we also say, oh, if I got an update from my link to the root and now it's too further away, I need to update my bookkeeping information, or else you're gonna have the wrong picture of the network. And how could that happen? Well, you know, if this link goes down, our spanning tree, you know, might take an extra step. And we want to learn about that. You know, so we still construct the correct one. Okay, so no questions about our spanning tree protocol? Okay, so spanning trees have this nice property that there's one path. But we actually want to choose intelligently between different paths in sort of our more general routing. Like if we're routing on the internet or we have a ISP with a nationwide network, it really matters which path we choose. And this is actually not a trivial decision. So here I've labeled our links with some bandwidths and latency. So what's the best path from A to B? Someone, a volunteer answer. How should I route packets from A to B? Yeah. Okay, so you're arguing the direct link, okay. Any other ideas? Yeah.
I was saying maybe like categorize different messages to use different routings.
So why not just send everything on the A to B?
Because it's only a one megabits link. So if you have like a lot of data to send, it might be like triggering a lot of congestion control.
Okay.
For example, if you use like A to G to B, then you have a threshold of 10 megabits.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we have two options here, and there's actually not a clear preference between them. Like one of them is lower latency, the other is higher bandwidth. And like it's not crazy to choose either route. And how about from B to E? What do we want to do there? Should our route from B to E be? Yeah. B to G to E. And what's your reasoning for that?
Well, you can send 8 megabits, mm-hmm. and it's relatively lower latency than B to D to E.
Yeah, so B to D to E is higher latency,
yeah.
And also slower.
Yeah.
So it's pretty clear we shouldn't choose that. We do have a couple other options. Going B to A, like that's going to be inferior than B to G to E. And B to G to F to E also seems pretty bad. So it seems worse. It seems just worse than B to G to E. Though something I'm not taking into account is, you know, how much other stuff is using these links. That could be a consideration too, and we haven't told you about that. And how about, and I guess F to G, like, has a similar situation to A to B, right? We have this low latency, slow link versus this higher latency, fast path. So when we're deciding what routes to choose, we need to have some way of like figuring out what links are better. And you're going to look at this and say, oh, there's all these subtle decisions to make. Surely there must be a really complicated way of doing this, and it's very disappointing. The most common method is that we'll choose a cost for, or distance value for each link, and most commonly that's going to be basically a constant divided by the bandwidth. So higher bandwidth has lower cost. There's other things we could imagine taking into account. You know, we talked about latency. We could also imagine taking like reliability into account, or how much it costs us, how much we're being charged for it. You know, or we can imagine trying to like spread out our traffic evenly to like fully utilize the link. All these great ideas. Yes, they're done sometimes, but by far, the most common by a huge metric is we have a cost that usually defaults to something based on the bandwidth. Basically this, and the second most common is or, sysadmin manually configures. Those are probably the most common ways, the metrics, the way we just rank our links is chosen. And also that we have a cost per link, typically. So all the protocols we're going to use are going to be based on, if I have a cost equals 3 and cost equals 4 link versus a cost equals 8 link, I'm going to choose the 3 plus 4. They're all going to be based on kind of assuming the costs are additive, even though that maybe doesn't work so well in some cases. But yeah, we're not going to really compensate for that. We're going to just assume additive costs, and that's what all our protocols are going to do. Yes, people do other things, but most of the routing protocols that are actually out there don't really take more advanced things into account. Because one observation you had here is right that, if we're just thinking of like there's lots of traffic from A to B, then this is better, but it's not like this, but we don't actually get the benefit of this being 11 megabits. Probably maybe we do because of other traffic, but yeah, there's all that stuff you could imagine taking into account. It's a great idea. The routing protocols we're going to do have this simple idea, simple metric. And basically what we're going to be looking for is finding kind of the shortest path after we've chosen these metrics. And that's what we want our routing table to end up containing. And one advantage of doing these metrics is that the shortest path from if we're going from A to say to B, and I guess I should have some using the shortest path is going to guarantee us no loops, even if we just do it at each step, because if the lowest cost way from A to B is here, then the lowest cost way from our first hop here, so this first hop here to B, so let's say this is C, the lowest cost from C to B has to be this. And that's because you know, if something else was lower, then that would be, give us a way of making A to B lower, because these costs are additive. So we're going to use the shortest path, and it's hard to avoid using it and be as, have things to be as convenient, because it lets us kind of set the routing table separately at each node based on the shortest path and know that it's all going to work out. We don't need to do central planning. We just need to say, what's the shortest path from here to the destination? Go that way. If we had kind of routes that like said, oh, when we have two links, it works, doesn't add up quite, like we like take the minimum or something, we couldn't do that. So given that we know we're doing shortest path, we're going to use some algorithms you might have learned in DSA 2 to do it. And we're going to start with kind of a routing protocol that's going to be based on Bellman-Ford, which you may have learned in DSA 2. This is one way to find shortest paths in a graph, which we'll consider a network. It's not the only way, and it's not actually the most common way, but it's gonna, we're going to choose it because it's going to have this very nice correspondence to a protocol that's going to look kind of like our spanning tree protocol, where we just share our current sort of notion of what the path should be with our neighbors, and everyone figures everything out eventually. And the Bellman-Ford algorithm, so who's seen this algorithm before from, you know, the DSA 2 or similar? Okay, like half-ish of the class. So the kind of key idea of this algorithm is we're going to track what the paths are by saying we're going to track the distance from A to B for every A and B. And, oh, I did this wrong. Equals 0 to equals, yeah, sorry, that is a big typo on this slide. Equals, I will correct that, equals infinity. So initially, we're going to say all nodes are infinitely far apart. And we're also going to track where the next pop is from A to B. Like, how do we get closer? What's the best way to get closer from A going to B? And basically, we're going to repeatedly examine every link. And say, does this link help us improve the path to any node? So I'm going to basically say that, okay, if I have a link from A to B, and I know that, you know, B can get to C with cost 10, and B can get from A to B. Oh, I'm doing this the wrong way. So yeah, I have a link from A to B, and I know that A can get to C, has distance 10, and A can get to D at distance 20, but B can get to C at distance 5, and B can get to D at distance 30. I'm going to compare this information along with the link I have. So let's say this link has distance 3. Well, that tells me that A to B plus B to C is going to have distance 3 plus 5 equals 8, which is better than what I had previously. So the key idea is we look at a link and say, can this link, you know, from A to B, can this make a path from A to something else better by going through this link and then going taking B's path to that thing? And we just examine that for everything B knows how to get to. And we update our next hop based on that. We say, okay, now we'll use that path which goes A to B and then wherever, however B knows how to get there. So we just do that for every node, and we just do this repeatedly. I say repeatedly, so we keep doing this until nothing changes. And in DSA2, you'll learn a proof that this is not as hideously inefficient as it sounds, because it's not obvious, like, how many times do we have to do this? Like, do I have to examine every link 1,000 times, a million times? In DSA2, like, you'll probably prove, like, how many times exactly. We're not going to be concerned about how many times. We're just going to keep running it continuously in kind of our solution, and actually continuously, because, well, if the network changes, we just keep running this. I keep doing these updates, and now the links are different, and that's fine. Like, we connect, plug something in, we just keep doing this, and we'll get there. So a way we can kind of go through the algorithm kind of systematically. So here I have a graph, sort of a set of nodes and links. And my links have different costs in different directions. This is something that we are allowed to do. In most of our network routing protocols, they don't actually do this. But, you know, it makes sense, like, if we have a link that's like a gigabit in one direction and 1 megabit in the other, right? We probably want to treat them differently in each, the shortest path in one direction is different than the other. And we can basically just look at edges. So I look at A to B and I say, okay, well, my best path from A to B, I'm going to look at, well, you know, but what are B's paths to? So B has a path to A with cost infinity. If I go from A to B to A, that doesn't help me, right? It's going to still have cost infinity. That's not better than A's current best path to A of 0. You know, that's way better. B has a best path to B with a cost of 0. It's a very simple path. It just doesn't go anywhere. And if I add my A to B link, that gives me a cost of 2. And I try to look for C. Best path from B to C is infinity. I go A to B to C. That doesn't help me. Like, it's just as bad. And same with D. Then if we consider the other direction, we got, you know, B to A can go with cost 4. And we can kind of add our link from C, B to C. You know, and that just adds path from B to C to our table here. And then we have the other direction. So I take the link from C to B, and I say, oh, I can go from C to B to A. That has cost 6. Because I have the B cost was 4, and I add the 2 from C to B. So now C's best path to A is 6 costs going to B next. Obviously, that's not the best one overall. We just haven't evaluated the edges from C to A to fix that. And to B, we have a cost of 2. And we're going to look at B's cost to C, but we're going to say, well, 2 plus 2, 4, you know, the cost from going from C to B and back to C, that's worse than just staying at C. So we're not going to do that. And C to D, that has a cost of 4, gives us a cost of 4 from C to D. And then we consider A to C, and here's where we're going to say, I did a wrong update there. I knew I didn't miss something. So when we do A to C, we're going to say that we can go from A to C to B, or A to C to D, and we find out, oh, we can go from A to C to C. That gives us a total cost of 1. Or we can go from A to C to D, and that gives us a cost of 5. I have the cost of 4 that C to D already has, plus 1 more. And I, for some reason, decided to update A to C, which shouldn't have happened yet. And that is also a wrong update. Okay. And then I made it right. Okay. Good work, me. But we're going to keep doing those updates until we get at kind of our correct overall chart. But this is just by repeatedly updating the edges until nothing ends up changing. So questions on this algorithm here? Yeah.
So, but isn't the link from, never mind. Let's see the other direction. And just making sure for the order, like technically is happening, is filling up each row, right? Like you should try to fill up every row if a link is possible.
You should try to fill up every row if a link is possible. So when we up at an edge, when we evaluate the edge from C to A, right, we're going to try to update all of these entries based on all of these entries.
Yeah, like for example, in the first row, A, the link from A to C would be immediately evaluated in the first iteration, right?
In the first row, what do you mean?
So the link from A to C directly, which is like one of the things possible.
So that's the order in which we evaluate edges links is arbitrary. So something that's going to be convenient for us in this algorithm is that I just choose a link to evaluate and I update, you know, and I update one row of the table based on where that link comes from.
Yeah, so why is the link from A to C like forecast again?
Why does the link from A to C forecast? That is an error in me figuring things out. You are correct that is. That should be one. This is what I get for filling this table out by hand.
Yeah, I think it's just it's supposed to be one like in the very beginning. It just didn't.
It just got updated wrong. Sorry. Thank you for pointing out. Yes, that should be one. I just fill out this table by hand rather than what I should have done is written a program to do it. So it's less likely to be wrong. So this is our sort of serial algorithm. We're going to have a distributed version of this. And it's going to be really nice that all we need to do is we need to like consider a link and do an update. And the way we're going to make the distributed version work is that, well, I'm not going to have a centralized table anymore. I'm going to split up the table. And each row of the table gets stored on each node. And we'll call that row a distance vector, because it's the distance to everything else. And we'll do something that's now going to be very familiar from our spanning tree protocol. We're going to periodically sort of share our information. So for example, C is going to say, hey D, I'm C, the cost I have, or you can get to C with cost 0. And C is going to use that to say, oh, well, I know that I can get back to C with a cost of 5. So let me update my information based on that cost of 0 and say, oh, that means I can get to C with cost of 5. And D can then share, you know, this information with B. So D can say, B, hey, I'm D. I can get to D with a cost of 0 and to C with a cost of 5. And B can say, okay, well, I know the cost of going back on that link is 1. So that gives me a cost of 6 to D, 6 to C via D, and a cost of, I am not being consistent on my ordering of this, okay. And a cost of 1 to D via D. And we're just going to keep sending these updates, you know, to everyone we can. So C is going to not just tell D about, you know, I can get to C with a cost of 0. It's going to tell everyone that it's connected to, I can get to C with a cost of 0. And they'll each update their information based on their reverse, you know, their reverse link for that. There's one other thing we'll do here. So we could just have, when D talks to C, D could share its whole table, you know, its whole row, I should say. But it's kind of not useful to share a path back to C to a C. So we're going to do this filtering where whenever our next hop is who we're sending to, we're just not going to tell them about it. In fact, we're going to tell them, you know, don't go this way. You know, I'm D, don't try to get to yourself for me. Or more importantly, if we had, you know, say, a path to A via C, then we would also say that A is don't try to get to A via me because I'm going to go back to you. And so to tell them that, we're just going to tell them it tossed infinitely high. Don't do it. This idea is not actually necessary. We could send back the raw cost and things will still work, but it makes things work a lot better to do this. And this idea is called a split horizon because we're basically having two views depending on which side of C, D we're coming out of. We're omitting the other half of it deliberately just to say, don't go back to me, I know that's wrong. Okay, so questions on kind of our basic update process here. So, yeah, oh, right, I should just do this example. So what should our, so C sends this update to D, what should happen? How should D update its table? What should go in A, B, C, and what should go here as a result of these updates? Someone tell me. No one. Okay.
So you get 6C and that 8 on your A.
Okay.
Because you're taking the 5 of the C plus the 1 to A.
Yeah, 6C. So 6 and the slot and the we know the distance and who it's via. And it comes from C, so it's going to be via C. We don't care how C got there. C isn't even telling us that. We just know it's 6 via C because this we're going to go, because our path to A from here, we're going to go up to C and let C figure it out. And it turns out the way C figures it out is C is going to go on its incorrect path to A. So that should actually be 7, but I messed up this slide again. I'll just edit this. There we go. But well, we're going to trust whatever C tells us, right? We don't check the graph. We check what C tells us. So if C is wrong, we're going to believe them. So yeah, I'll just update. Where is my eraser? Hi. There. Okay. There's my eraser. Okay. Yeah, so we're going to have 6C. That's 5 plus 1. 5 plus 1. Okay. Then we're going to do the same for B. We're going to have 5, we're going to have 7 to B. Right. Because we're not going to, so we know eventually we should find a better way to get to B, but we haven't been told from B about it yet. When B tells us, we're going to update that information. And then from to C, we have 0 plus 5. So we can get to C with a cost of 5 via C. And we're not going to update our path to D because we don't need to get, because 5 plus 5, 10 is greater than our current best idea, which is 0. So questions on how to figure out what gets updated? Yes? Oh, 7 through C, yes, you are correct. I am being very sloppy. So the 7 through C. So all these paths, yes, are through C. So this is where we got it from, C, C, C. And I believe I have that, yes, written down correctly. Okay, so how about here? So we got our update from B. What should change? Or D equals 6. M1. So our process is going to be that we're going to say, well, you know, what we could add is 4 plus 2b. So that's a choice there. Like, either is fine for us to choose. So that's 6b for A. For B, we could add 2b. That's going to definitely be better. For C, we could add 4c. So that is, in fact, definitely better. So we are going to add that. And for D, we could add, or sorry, 4, I keep doing this. We're going to add 4 via B. I should write via. So these are all going to be 4/B because we're going through B. And I keep messing that up because I'm not. And we could add, again, /B, and that's going to be 6 plus 2, 8 via B. That's not better than there. So we're going to maybe add the 1 to A. We're definitely going to add the 1 to B and C. So we'll have this and also 4 via B is a better path. Okay, so questions? This update process. I see I, yes, didn't carefully check these slides, but I was going to go through it anyways. But yeah, so, and the key thing is that we have our, this is distance/via who. So this is where did I get the path from, and we keep track of the distance. That's fine. So something that's a little imprecise is we want to apply this to actual routing networks. And I've kind of showed this as a problem of us finding the best path to a router. But that's not what we care about. We care about finding paths to networks. And networks aren't the same thing as routers. So when we actually operate this protocol, we're going to have some sort of network here. So here I have a network where I have 1, 2, 3, 4 routers. And I have a network here, I have some sort of network here, and one here. And we might have 4 different networks here, and they don't correspond in a kind of clean way to the routers. Right? Our routers, because they route things between networks, are each connected to multiple networks. And what we care about in our, you know, actual, you know, operation of this protocol is not routing things to the routers, it's routing things to the networks. So our routers are connected in this way, but what we'll actually be sharing are kind of the distances to the networks. Because that's what we actually want to do. We want to send a packet not to a specific router, to a specific network. And so when we start out, the routers know what networks they're directly connected to. That's kind of their initial distance vector. And that's the information we're going to share. Questions? So in the most part, I'm going to use the, like, as if we're sending things between router's view of things, but I want to point this out because this is like a very important practical issue that, you know, that's not how we're at, what we're actually doing. So this is called distance vector routing. So because we have that list, we call that a distance vector. So we keep a cap of distance, the distance to each other place we want to go, typically like all the networks we might want to send packets to. And we also keep track of what's the next hop. We need to keep track of the next hop because that's what goes on our forwarding table. And we periodically send our distance vector to our neighbors. And we're receiving a distance vector from a neighbor. We check, you know, would going through, you know, this neighbor give me a better distance? And if so, we update our distance vector in our next hops. And in there's a routing protocol that's somewhat used that really implements this called the routing information protocol. And it works in pretty much exactly that way. Routers send a list of their distances, what networks they can reach, and each router processes that and sees if they can update their routes. And the routes, again, are to networks, not to routers. Right? So, but a network in this context is like an IP range, address range. Right? That's what they're going to say. I can get to 1.2.3.x, you know, for any x via this cost. And when we do updates in this, well, the policy they have is that they sort of send these every 30 seconds just to make sure things don't get out of date from failures or something like that. And when there's changes, they send updates immediately. So like if I get something from B and that causes me to update my distance vector, I immediately tell everyone about that. And this means that if I connect a new router, that it should send its initial update packets to everyone it's connected to. And that should immediately cause like a sort of a wave of updates on the network. So we relatively quickly figure out how to incorporate that new router into our shortest paths. So probably the thing which makes sort of this routing information protocol kind of tricky is that, you know, the update rule I've shown you so far assumes routes only get better. But links go down, and we want to handle that. So that requires some care. And one thing we're going to do is we have to pay attention to when we get an update. We have to check, does this update mean that one of my existing routes is, you know, has a higher distance now? So let's go through this in our last few minutes, and we'll pick up this probably next week, next Thursday. So if I'm A, and this is my distance vector, and my next hop information, if my link to D goes down, how should I update this? Yeah. So C and D should both become infinity. So this is infinity, and this is infinity. Yeah. And the idea is we're going to have later, we're going to learn again from someone else who probably has a path to C, hopefully, a way to get there. But right now, we don't know one. Because D, our link to D went down. We can't go via D anymore. Now, this is handles like the node directly connected to the link, but we have a, you know, a problem of like, what if I have A, I'm connected to D, and D is connected to C, and this link goes down? Or D is connected to, let's say, an E to like make things, yeah, to C, and that link goes down. we have to figure out how to update this to handle that situation. So what should A's new distance vector be now that D tells it that, oh, my cost to C is now infinity? So what should happen? Yeah. Yeah, so we need to have an exception that when our current route, we need to update our distance for our current route when we're getting an update for that link. So we need to update this even though kind of infinity is greater than old distance of 4. Because we've been informed that 4 is wrong. And we need to change it to a different number. So this is kind of an extra step we need to do to handle removal, is that we need to say, if this, you know, is this updating the distance I have stored because it, you know, it's the route through that next hop, did that distance change to something higher? So applying that here, what should our new distance vector B in this case, that D tells me. So let's go to this case. Okay. Here. Yeah. Yeah, so the question is, how could this happen? So this is if we're not doing that optimization of sending infinity. And how could it happen? Well, probably A previously had a fast link to C that went down. A found a path to D via, to C via another link that went down. And now that both of those links are down, there's not actually a way to get to C, but we don't know that yet. So this is the kind of scenario we need to worry about in these protocols. So this is the reason why we typically will not send back a route to A, which we'll talk about explicitly later. But kind of if we don't do that, things still work. The issue is that we have to say, you know, don't do this. So. Yeah, and I should do the example here. Yeah, sure, this is a better example. So next time we'll talk about kind of one issue that arises from this kind of scenario, which is that there's a problem where when things get disconnected from the network, we don't have a way of figuring that out in general, and we have what's called a count to infinity problem. So we'll talk about that and the solutions for it. A partial solution is to say, oh, if it comes via A, ignore it. But that's not sufficient because we can have a more complicated way of this happening. And the reason this can happen is because, again, we have, like, things get disconnected and we don't find out about that everywhere all at the same time. And that makes us sort of have these sort of temporary wrong values propagating through the network. Okay, so that's where I'll finish up. Now, talk to you.